It's hard to describe Thoroughly Modern Millie, a musical that is at once a charming comedy about love and capitalism in the 1920s, and a satirical look at racial stereotypes and human trafficking. The musical follows Millie Dumont, the modern woman who travels from a small town to New York City in order to marry for money. She finds a job, friendship, love, and a slavery ring. And it's a comedy! My guest today is Kristen Holden, herself a Midwestern girl who left for the big city, and we break down the show for all of its good music and deeply concerning characters. I hope you enjoy our conversation about Thoroughly Modern Millie. Hi, Kristen. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Quinn?
I am not bad. So what are we talking about today?
We are talking about Thoroughly Modern Millie.
There is so much to talk about with this show, which we'll be diving into shortly. But to kick us off, how did you start to get into this show?
So I first heard Gimme Gimme on Glee back in the day. And I fell in love with it because it's such a good love song to sing when you need that catharsis. But I soon realized that Millie Dumont is also, like myself, a Midwesterner who moved away to a big city. So I related to that hardcore and just started listening to the Broadway soundtrack all the time.
And what about performing songs from Thoroughly Modern Millie?
Yeah, I performed in Forget About the Boy with a group a little while back, which is like this amazing girl power tap number where you just like belt out all your feelings.
Was that a man I once adored? He's nothing but an albatross, no great loss, double cross. Sir, forget about the boy.
And I also, for my senior solo, did Not for the Life of Me, which is the opening number where Millie moves to New York City.
It was so good. And from my perspective, the song Forget About the Boy and the song Not for the Life of Me were the only things I knew about this musical going into listening to it for this episode. So, first of all, I had some surprises in my future. But also, yeah, that was my entire perspective. And I was like, what a fun, charming musical. But let's start off talking about the music, though, because I think that is, I mean, unsurprisingly, absolutely the best part of the show.
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun. It's really, like, slightly ragtimey. It's full of, like, tap numbers and just, like, huge group belting with, like, fun harmonies everywhere you look. And it's so much fun to sing, so much fun to listen to.
I like that you included that there are fun harmonies, just to make sure that everyone knows that you're in a show choir.
Great for the altos out there, yeah.
What's your favorite number from it?
It's got to be Not for the Life of Me. After getting to perform that one too, it like took on the new sentimental value to me. But it's also just, it's like so relatable. It's like the person who struggles with two sides of their identity, like who they were and who they want to be.
Life that's got to be more than a one-night town where the light is always red. Got to be more than an old ghost town where the ghost ain't even dead. So lend me your hand, sugar, because don't you know that where I am ain't where I was. Not for the life of me.
And yeah, Millie's just like this fun, brave character. So like stepping into that role was so great for me.
The music style in this whole show is interesting because I noticed this especially in one of the earliest songs, which is called Thoroughly Modern Millie, and she's singing about what a modern woman she is.
I'm changing in how. So beat the drums, cause here comes Thoroughly Modern Millie now.
The music that accompanies it is, I mean, of course, like old-time music because it's from the 20s, but at the time, that was the most modern music that mainstream people were listening to. And so it's an interesting dichotomy. I think it really puts you in the time.
Yeah, it's different than like the Baz Luhrmann remake of Great Gatsby where he used like rap and hip-hop and what we see as modern music to show what was modern at the times as opposed to this like actually integrating what was hip then.
That would be an interesting restaging of Thoroughly Modern Millie with actual modern stuff. I like it, though, and it lends itself so much to tap dancing, which it seems that they take full advantage to throughout the show.
Oh, yeah. There's an amazing scene where, like, Millie and her friend get into an elevator, and in order to make it start, they're like, yeah, people dance in here all the time, so we have to tap dance to make this elevator work. And they just randomly break out into this beautiful little choreographed scene, and it's so, like, charming and hilarious, but also really confusing at the same time.
Wow, what must it be like to live in a world where dancing in elevators make them work instead of break?
Oh, gosh. So
Kristen recently broke an elevator.
Yeah. I was trying to practice my dance moves when all of a sudden it jolted to a stop as I did the big jump. It was really sad.
We've all learned from our mistakes. And then the production itself is led by Sutton Foster and Gavin Creel in the original Broadway show, who are two just absolutely wonderful stars.
Oh, yeah. You cannot listen to their voices and not fall totally in love with them. They're so cute.
This, I actually think, is my first Sutton Foster show that I've listened to.
Oh, I saw her in Bunheads back in the day, the Amy Sheridan Palladino show, and she was just, like, bubbly, and you just had to love her.
Wait, what's Bunheads about?
Bunheads is a story of ballerinas living out in Nevada, I think, maybe California, somewhere in there. Yeah, and it's basically this fun story of, like, female friendships and people just trying to make it in the arts while still balancing other parts of their lives.
That's sweet. Yeah. That sounds familiar.
Too real.
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, I've listened to a little bit of the Shrek soundtrack, I guess. Sutton Foster is also in.
Yeah, surprisingly. Anything Goes back in the day. Another great one of hers. So much fun.
I knew Gavin Creel a little bit better because I saw She Loves Me, which was a production that was filmed and shown live on Broadway HD online and still available to see. Hashtag give us all of the professionally filmed Broadway shows. That's a terrible hashtag, but you get what I mean.
I'd actually never seen Gavin Creel in anything before now, but I'm going to seek him out.
You should watch She Loves Me. It's great. Oh. He's really mean in it.
A different side of Jimmy.
Also, I didn't really know a lot about this show before embarking on this journey to be familiar with it for this episode. But, like, so I don't really know how to gauge how popular it is. Because, I mean, it won a bunch of Tonys and it seems like it's pretty successful. But I also think it's not really a popular show just on the range of popularity that we have now. What is your estimate of this?
I feel like people know a lot of the good hit songs from Thoroughly Modern Millie, but they don't really know the show as, like, a holistic piece.
So what songs do people know from it?
Okay, I am definitely biased because I am in a show choir, but Gimme Gimme seems to be a big one that just, like, has made its way into the mainstream.
Mainstream theater.
Mainstream theater. I feel like Forget About the Boy and Not for the Life of Me you actually see done several times. I mainly know Not for the Life of Me is out there because I have looked up so many YouTube videos when trying to tweak my performance of it. But yeah, it's pretty popular.
Interesting. I wouldn't know any of it if it wasn't for show choir. But that's just me. I don't know. I feel like I have a serious gap when it comes to musicals from, like, the 90s, early 2000s. For some reason, I know a lot of, like, the really old classic ones, and then I know pretty much everything since around 2007. But anything, like, 90s, 2000s, I'm just like, whatever, I don't know.
There's a big gap. Yeah, no, I feel that. Like, you know, the classics, like Rent and all those good ones. But...
Well, Rent is a 90s one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, 1996.
Oh, shoot. Well, just kidding, I lied. Maybe I only know 90s ones.
I only know that it's 1996 because of the 20th anniversary tour in 2016,
oh.
Which I went to twice.
Ah.
But yeah, I was too busy being a child, so I didn't catch up with a lot of Broadway musicals at that time. So I do want to get into the meat of this story. We're going to start light because there's a couple different layers going on to this. It's the story of Millie as a Midwestern girl who comes into the city and is looking for money, actually is what she's looking for. So looking for money and finding relationships and exploring different relationships along the way. But there's also this other, like, really weird other layer of this slavery ring and some really concerning portrayals of Asian characters and lots of stuff like that. And so we're going to start light and be, like, in non-spoiler territory, and then we're going to dive right into everything else. So you say that you relate to Millie.
Oh, yeah. I am from Illinois originally. So, like, Millie being from the Midwest and finding her way in the city is, like, hashtag relatable content to me.
Did you also come to the city looking for money?
I must admit, I did not come to the city looking for money and a wealthy husband. However, I think part of Millie's narrative is also that she's like trying to get away from being in the middle of nowhere. A lot of the lyrics in Not for the Life of Me are how like there were even in some ways suppressive gender roles pushed on her being home. Like one thing she talks about is being like the farmer's daughter or like the country wife. So in a lot of ways it's like breaking out and doing her own thing, like getting a job. What's really weird is that Millie's idea of being thoroughly modern, even though it is still like marrying a rich man, it's like finding the rich man through working a job first. So it's like a weird didactic going on there. But yeah, she tries to be a self-starter in her own way, I think.
There's some really interesting subversions of that whole idea. One of my favorite lines from the whole show is, I'm going to forget the exact phrasing, which you probably know, but it's like better than living in a ghost town where all the ghosts ain't even dead.
Oh, yeah.
Which is just, oh, it's so good. Because I'm not from the Midwest, but I am from a really small rural town. And so I get some of the same feelings of like feeling like there aren't any dreams where you live and that people aren't striving for big things and that wanting to move somewhere where people are following dreams and trying to reach really big heights because you feel that in yourself and that's where you want to be.
Mm. Yeah, the city holds like a different pace for Millie. And I think that's something that the music does really well. At the very start of Not for the Life of Me, which is where Millie's really transitioning from being like the Midwestern girl to being the city girl, it starts off like slowly with this nice, beautiful bluesy rhythm, and then it breaks into like fast-paced singing and belting and like all these people rushing in and moving past her. And the music does a really good job of just like expressing this transition that's going on in Millie at that point.
I also like how her first step in her transformation is, like, to get a haircut.
Oh, yeah.
Because same.
It's so true.
I actually cut all my hair off the first year of school, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I relate. It was not to a 20s flapper bob haircut, but it was the 2000, I guess it was 2015, the 2015 equivalent, which was to get a pixie cut. But yeah, and we have Millie going out and first immediately getting mugged.
Yeah.
And then being able to go out and overcome that and find a job, which is a whole interesting thing. But yeah, it's this weird mix of motivations where like she's trying to find a rich husband, but she's doing that by like, I'll find a job in a good place and then there'll be rich men who work there.
Mm-hmm. And she gets the job on her own merit. Like, there's this whole hilarious song where she's practicing being a stenographer and, like, basically proves that she can keep up to pace with the city folks and, like, outdoes a lot of other people in the process.
I wonder where she learned to type.
Yeah, that's true.
Where have you been typing, really?
Minor plot hole.
I don't know. Maybe she had a typewriter on the farm.
Yeah.
They just need to throw one line in there about that. We don't know, because you haven't actually seen the show performed, right?
Right, yeah. I've actually only listened through the album multiple times, and I've seen, like, clips of some of the numbers here and there, but yeah, I've never seen a live version.
Yeah, so for all we know, there's a very in-depth conversation about her typing lessons of youth, but we have some gaps in, as far as what we know about the stage production.
Mm-hmm. So, Rodgers and Hammerstein, we've talked about this a bit before, but they have a tendency to do the, like, I'm not in love with you song when it's very clear that characters have feelings for each other. And it's kind of like the musical's way of playing into the rom-com trope of like boy meets girl, boy loses girl. And Millie and Jimmy both have these amazing songs like that about each other where they're like, got it good. What do I need with love? I don't actually need you, but like within the course of the song, you see them turning bit by bit.
Mm-hmm. Should clarify, this is not a Rodgers and Hammerstein musical.
Yeah.
But it does follow that same convention of the I'm not in love with you song. This is a Jeanine Tesori and a Dick Scanlon musical, which I don't actually know a lot about Dick Scanlon, but Jeanine Tesori also wrote music for Fun Home, which I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And Shrek.
And Shrek the musical.
One day we'll do an episode about Shrek the music. Maybe we do Shrek and SpongeBob in the same episode.
I That makes sense.
Iconic cartoon musicals. But yeah, and then What Do I Need With Love gives Gavin Creel a chance to really express his voice and to show off, which is what we all need in the world. It's a little bit more Gavin Creel.
It's so cute.
And then along the way with Millie's story, as she's striving to find someone to marry and she's looking for jobs and looking to make it in the big city, she ends up accidentally checking into this hotel, which what she does not know is it's a front for a white slavery ring. Which I, brief side note, I was reading just the plot blurb on Wikipedia that's at the very top, and it was like, Thoroughly Modern Millie is a musical with blah, blah, blah. Millie Dumont comes to New York City to marry for money instead of love. A thoroughly modern aim in 1922. Da, 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 da. Problems arise when she checks into a hotel owned by the leader of a white slavery ring in China. And I said, what? That took a sudden turn that I was not prepared for. But yeah, and at this point, we're going to fire off the spoiler horn and just dive right into it because there is so much to get into here. It is all very strange. This hotel is run by this character named Miss Mears, and it's staffed by two immigrants from China, who I think are from Hong Kong specifically, who are named Ching Ho and Bun Fu, which are not real Chinese names. So that's concerning thing number one of a thousand.
Yeah, not only that, Mrs. Mears is like this former actress who decides that in order to keep up this front for her hotel, she needs to wear yellow face. And like half of the humor in Mrs. Mears' character is like yellow face jokes, which is super, super problematic.
Yeah, this whole plot line is very weird. So this thing is supposedly she gets girls without families, like young women without families, to check into this hotel, and then she sells them into a human trafficking ring. And it's very horrible. And the weirdest thing is that this entire show is comedic. Like, this is all for comedy. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to grapple with here, and there's different perspectives on this. And we're going to be diving into a couple different interpretations that people have had of this whole plot line. Some people, like some of the original actors from the show talked about how they see it actually as like a very progressive subversion. Some other people, like, especially as it comes up in more, modern conversations, although this musical's from 2002, like it's not that old, but, people talking about it in more recent years, like have a lot of problems with racist depictions of characters and plot lines. So let's talk about the positive interpretations of it first, I guess. So this was something in particular that was expressed by one of the actors in the original Broadway production, Ken Leung. And he shared that he thought of it as a very progressive step, actually. And that, because there's a song in the soundtrack when, so Millie's big song at the beginning, like we've talked about, is Not For the Life of Me, and then the two Chinese men who are working in this hotel sing a version of that in Mandarin later on in the musical. They are working towards their own goals, they have their own motivations, and at the end they achieve their goals, and they even, one of them even marries one of our lead women, and so it's this real triumph, and it's this positive association between like Millie's story of trying to make it into the big city and this immigrant story of also trying to make it in the big city. And on that level, I think that there is some value there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think on some level you can see that in the show, like you're talking about, they're the parallel songs, but also they incorporate Mandarin into the musical, which isn't something that I think has ever been done on Broadway before this, and it's kind of cool.
I am by far not an expert in this. I'm white and I am not a native Mandarin speaker. I have studied Mandarin, and when I was just listening to it, and then suddenly people were talking and singing in Mandarin, and I was like, whoa, what's happening? And to my ears, it sounded disconcerting, and I realized the reason was because Chinese is so fast paced because in a lot of ways it's way more efficient than English. The grammar system is more efficient, and a lot of times, like, one character, so one syllable, can express a multi-syllable word in English. And so I'm used to, when I am talking to people and listening to people speak in Mandarin, it being incredibly fast-paced, and to honestly me having, like, a huge difficulty keeping up. And in this case, because they were taking an English song and just directly fitting Mandarin words to it, it ended up being pretty stretched out in areas and quite slow in areas, which I thought was interesting. Not necessarily a bad thing, but it was just such clearly a song that was written for English and then translated after the fact without, it was not written with, like, both of them in mind, which doesn't, like, is not inherently good or bad, but it just seemed like an interesting effect in the final product.
Yeah. It's still very clearly, like, Millie's narrative that other stories are being built around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that section, I think that with these characters, if I, like, am avoiding saying their names because their names are just so offensive. Also, this musical is based on a movie from 1967, and in the movie they are billed as Orientalist number one and number two, which is just horrible. And then in the show, I have no idea why they weren't given real names. They're just sounds that sound Chinese. And it's been noted so many times that, like, these are not real Chinese names. And it's very confusing, especially since they were working with actual Chinese actors to build these characters, that I guess because it's supposed to be comedic, but that's, again, like, that's not comedy that's including the Chinese characters. It's comedy at expense of the Chinese characters, which, if, like, for the arguments that this show is, like, meta and subversive, that doesn't seem to hold up at all.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's, it's not that hard to, like, I don't know, like, find a list of, like, Chinese names, or, like, to talk to people, like, literally the people in your cast and crew about Chinese names.
Mm-hmm. There have been various adaptations of this, because this has become a quite popular show for high schoolers. I think that the style and the casting list really fits high school theater productions pretty well. But obviously there have been some controversies over the years with this kind of character portrayal. And so there have been some changes, including changing their names. Like, I was reading about one production just changed their names to, like, Brian and something else. Just, like, a very, like, generic American name. And making various changes for, like, oh, it's not a trafficking ring, it's just a kidnapping. Which I feel like they don't explain where the kidnappings are going or the purpose behind them, but that's honestly not necessary for the show, really. Mm-hmm. You know, think about this show is really dark. It's billed as a comedy, but one of the characters does, like, disappear into a human trafficking ring partway through, and I don't think they get her back.
You mean the tenant who was there before?
Yeah, like, yeah. Someone that Millie meets disappears.
They just kind of write her off and are like, all right, bye. Whew, pretty horrible. And I think when I first, like, listened through the musical and read through the plot, my impression of it was that they tried to make a story that was, like, almost so outrageous that it was funny, and that they thought that, like, human trafficking for whatever reason was the way to go with that. And, like, even though that's totally off tone, I think the weirdest part to me was learning that this whole musical and the movie itself were based on this really, really dark British musical drama that was, like, straight up just about human trafficking. Like, there's almost no fun love plotline or, like, anything, like, silly or quirky about it. It was just, like, this very dark, sad story.
And that's not the only time that you've seen a show on Broadway that takes source material and really changes the tone one way or another. But I think that it carries so much of that darkness still with it without addressing it, that it becomes very tonally weird. And I think that this is also a consequence of reading about it and listening to it without the context of seeing it on stage. Because, I mean, onstage performances matter so much for this kind of thing. And so I think maybe if we had seen it, it would, like, just have come off so comedic for us. I would assume, based on, like, how well it did, and how many Tonys it won and all of those things. But on the other hand, I'm kind of glad that I don't have that I can take a step back and just look at what the actual plot is and what the actual music is and what story that's telling.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost even more alarming to think that, like, we could watch this show and not think about that. And, like, you think of, or maybe not, but, like, the audiences could watch this show and just sort of follow along with the smoothed over, like, deep, dark plot lines that are there and not dig into that themselves because they enjoy what they're seeing on the surface.
The really huge issue with this show, though, is Mrs. Mears.
Mm-hmm.
Just on so many levels. So Mrs. Mears is this person who's running this human trafficking ring in this hotel, and that she's luring these young girls or young women. And they don't really explain the mechanics of how this works. Again, not really necessary for the show, I guess. But yeah, and then she's doing the whole thing in yellowface. She's pretending to be a Chinese woman.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, I didn't get this the first time I was, like, listening through the songs. But once I started looking up, like, pictures of the show or, like, little clips of the production, I was pretty aghast.
And it's weird because it's yellowface in the context of the show. Like, this is not a white actress playing an Asian character. It's a white actress playing a white character playing an Asian character. Which could, on the surface, be a subversive choice, as she is a villain and they could, you know, suitably condemn that. But I think that with all of the other issues that this show has, it doesn't reach that level.
Yeah, and Mrs. Mears, as a villain, isn't even, like, this dark, sinister, horrible character. She's, like, the comedic relief in so many scenes. Like, if you watch the clips of her giving her lines, the audience is just roaring with laughter. Like, she is this piece of comedic gold for the show in this horrifying way.
With this whole conversation about all of the problems with this show, there's also just, on the whole base of the plotline being around a human trafficking ring done for comedic effect, which we've already covered is weird, but I can see maybe that, like, it works on stage, I guess, if it's this whole farce. But it's also just an intensely weird portrayal because it's specifically a white trafficking ring. Mm-hmm. It's specifically trafficking white women to Hong Kong when in actuality, like, in the 1920s, like, we had, you know, really horrible discrimination against Asian people with, like, the Immigration Act of 1924, which barred Asian immigration. And then, like, then and now, it's so much more likely that Asian women are going to be victims of human trafficking than white women are.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very weird choice, I think, to have it be a white woman trafficking ring at all, but even especially in the context of what the world is actually like and the way discrimination actually works in America and across the rest of the world, that it comes off as completely tone deaf.
Mm-hmm. And the show really, like, bizarrely tries to scratch the surface with, like, the difficulties that Asian immigrants faced. Like, for instance, these two Chinese men are working to bring their mother over to America so that they can, like, finally reunite with their family. And the songs that they sing about this are, like, actually really sad and moving and, like, make you feel a lot for these characters. But at the same time, then the show does this complete 180 and, like, creates this narrative that's just objectively false about the way that, like, discrimination and difficulties with human trafficking are faced.
And regardless of your own opinions of this show, take everything that we're saying with a grain of salt, or, like, a big spoonful of salt in whatever direction, because we haven't seen it performed live and we don't know how it comes across actually on stage. But with the information that we have, I feel like there are some substantial but not too difficult changes that could be made to really flip this plot around and make it a truly, like, interesting immigrant story that's subversive of stereotypes instead of playing into them. It's like, you can, if you want to be subversive within a show, you have to go all the way. You can't try to subvert some things, but actually just be stereotypical for the same characters in other ways. Like, you have to pick one. This is a complicated show where all of these portrayals of Asian characters are concerned, and I think there are a lot of issues with it. I personally do not condemn it 100% because I think that that diminishes credit that's given to like the Asian actors that did work on this and mm-hmm. who do have interesting plot lines, like with the two workers in the hotel who like do have actual plot lines and who achieve their goals in the end. Like, I don't want to say that like the entire show is just racist and horrible, because I feel like that diminishes those plot lines. But at the same time, it does have a huge number of issues, and that I think that a lot of people like find that the issues of it are so overpowering that the entire show becomes poisoned. Mm. So there are different perspectives on it, but I don't think that any reaction to it is invalid where these kinds of things are concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of sad to me, because as much as I love the character of Millie and I love the songs in the show, the plotline just kind of makes me take a step back and ask myself like whether I actually would want to see a production of this and would feel comfortable sitting in a theater where people are like laughing at these jokes made possibly at the expense of Asian Americans.
I feel like this entire show would be in a different context if it was actually made by Asian or Asian American people. Mm. Because with this whole concept of like, I use the word subverting a lot, but I really think it's what the show is going for and perhaps doesn't hit. Subverting stereotypes is like, that can be done by the people who aren't suffering from the stereotypes, but I think like 9 times out of 10, it's going to be done effectively when you actually understand what those experiences are. And that this show, while it had some input from the actors who were part of it, was like significantly primarily made by white people.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this is all just on top of a very sad media landscape context. Because, I mean, if this show existed in a vacuum of Asian American representation, then we'd probably be fine. You'd be like, oh, well, that's a weird, bad show. And then we'd move on. But, I mean, like, Asian representation in American media is so whitewashed and so stereotyped.
Especially on Broadway, though.
Yeah, especially on Broadway. The shows that do significantly feature Asian characters are things like South Pacific and The King and I and
Miss Saigon.
Miss Saigon. And like these shows that don't, spoiler alert, they have really interesting, complex Asian characters, but the show as a framework is very exoticizing and fetishizing and lots of really concerning things. We do have shows now like Allegiance, which was on Broadway, and like that was actually made by Asian American people to represent Asian American stories. But there is still a long way to go. This is a huge conversation about this show and about all of Broadway that we somehow made this like really gigantic meta conversation. And we are white ladies on this episode, so we are not like the experts on this kind of thing, but it's something that I think that all people should be aware of and thinking about in the context of media that we consume. And like, you chose this show because you like it and because it has really good attributes, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't also have negative stuff that we should address and talk about. I mean, we talked about it for like half the episode because it's such a huge part of what it is. But I think it's okay to like to discuss and critically consume media that has both good and bad aspects, and to have these conversations and say like, I really like this song from this musical, but I don't have, that doesn't mean that I endorse it overall, you know?
Mm. Yeah, because I think there are parts of Thoroughly Modern Millie that have like the potential to be really positive and really cheerful. I love Forget About the Boy. It's this huge like girls supporting girls number where they're just like, actually we don't need men, like forget about them, we're gonna do our own thing. And yeah, so it has its good little gems, but it's also like something that at least I personally wish could be changed so that I could enjoy it as a whole piece of art.
Mm-hmm. I think before we get to the lightning round, just to end off our conversation with a little bit more positive note, I do want to talk about this girl power aspect of the show. The whole concept of girl power, I think, is like a little bit condescending because I'm like, I am a woman. But there really is this sort of fun aspect to this sisterhood idea, and that like we are all having a good time here and tap dancing, and that supporting each other becomes like not only on this very serious feminism side, but also just like a really fun sort of sleepover vibe.
Yeah. And also one of Millie's biggest inspirations in the show is Muzzy, who is this like black female singer who's made a name for herself. Spoiler alert, she turns out to be the stepmother of Jimmy and her best friend. But Muzzy is like the one who really inspires Millie to pursue what she actually loves and what she actually wants. So also like this idea of female mentorship comes up in this musical.
I love female mentorship. There is not one plot device I love more in the world than female mentorship. And that is a nice aspect. And she is like, Muzzy is a really cool character. She has an amazing entrance. She's glamorous. She's fun. And then, of course, at the end, she turns out to be super rich and related to all our main characters. So everyone's super rich.
Yeah, the capitalism really comes out in this musical.
This is a capitalist musical.
It's also kind of sassy towards capitalism, though. I don't know. The name of the company that Millie goes to work for is called Sincere Trust, which is like a play on the word trust as like what it actually, you know, like a bank and trust, but like trust isn't trust in your friends, and like sincere trust, like this. Yeah. Anyways.
But also sin, right?
Sin. Sincere trust.
Cinemascope.
Sin. Oh.
See, we chose to go on a racial lens analysis of this musical, but we could have done it through like a socialism lens and examine all of the capitalist ideas. I do really like all the aspects of female friendship in here. Again, like, it's this weird... I do think that Thoroughly Modern Millie does achieve being subversive about gender relationships and how it's this... She is motivated by money instead of love, which is this funny comedic trope. And then she's motivated to get a job in order to get a husband, which is this weird idea of how she's making her own way. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. And she's very sure of herself in finding this husband. Like there's a part, the man she's trying to marry is named Mr. Graydon. And there's a part where she like confuses her last name for a second and is like, I'm Millie Graydon. And she's like, wait, actually, just kidding. Like, not yet, but soon.
She's like, call me in 2 weeks. Also, oh my God. Mr. Graydon, we'll see you now.
Oh, gosh. A whole new meaning.
I feel like I just want that, like, the Illuminati symbol to come over the Thoroughly Modern Millie poster now. And it's like, I see the connection. We didn't even talk about Dorothy at all, really.
Yeah.
Dorothy is Millie's friend, who... Well, this is another weird aspect, but she's rich and she decides she wants to live like she's poor to, I guess, find out who her true friends are. There's a whole fun song about it.
Yeah, she moves into this hotel with Millie, and Millie's like, oh, don't live here. It's absolutely horrible. Like, no running water. It's cold all the time. And the woman's like, oh my gosh, yes, absolutely. Like, where can I sign up?
It's a little like fetishizing the poor kind of rich person thing. But it sets up some fun plot twists to come on later on.
Yeah.
The plot twist is everyone is rich.
Everyone is rich. Even when they marry for love, they're still rich.
When I was reading the plot description and I got to like, it turns out, so she has this whole thing about should she marry Jimmy, but Jimmy's poor. So shouldn't she marry the rich guy? So she eventually decides at the end that she loves Jimmy. And then at the end is like, it turns out Jimmy is actually an heir and is super fabulously wealthy. And I was like, what a surprise.
Yeah. It's kind of like, don't worry about the money. Like, love will get you through it all. And it's like, but actually, like, you get money too. Don't worry. Because
that was kind of the message the whole time, though, because she hears this story from her friend that like, oh, I chose to marry for love and he gave me this green glass necklace, and then it turned out later it was a real emerald. And so that's kind of the story, is like, marry for love, but don't marry for love because you love them. Marry for love because it will secretly get you rich.
Yeah. Yeah. Bizarrely, that's like always there.
And in the end, I mean, the rich people do marry for love because they marry poor people, and that Jimmy marries Millie, and then Dorothy ends up marrying one of the Chinese immigrants, Ching Ho. And so they follow through on the message of the show, but our main character and our other like kind of immigrant story that we're following both end up just being rich in the end. So it works out.
Yeah. Also, to be fair, Dorothy's name is Dorothy Carnegie Mellon Vanderbilt von Hosmer. So it kind of sounds like she doesn't really need to marry for wealth anyways. She's pretty set.
She's set. She's good. She killed it. Congratulations on being born. How are you a Carnegie and a Vanderbilt?
Right? Yeah. Another unexplained.
The mystery deepens. And on that note, I think we are ready to finish up for today. So are you ready for the lightning round?
Oh, yeah.
So we actually already covered this, but what is your favorite song?
Not for the life of me.
And what is your favorite line?
Oh, forget about the boy, because sometimes you need to remind yourself of that.
Excellent. Now, what is your favorite character? Who is your favorite character?
Oh, definitely Millie. But again, I'm super biased because I can relate.
And if you could play a character in the show, which one would you want to play?
Also, probably Millie. But like, Jimmy's also super fun. He's like, I don't know, just kind of a ruffian who just does his own thing and like gets all these snazzy little songs. Yeah, if I were a dude, I'd totally. Or not. Make me Jimmy. Put me in, coach.
The show is about lesbians now. You're welcome.
Made it so much better.
Who would you recommend go see this show?
Mm.
Well, we covered we weren't sure we recommend we see this show. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think the numbers are super, super fun. And the show, like, visually is supposed to be very beautiful. Like, every clip I've seen of it, the transitions that they do between scenes are so much fun. So I think if you're someone who loves, like, an upbeat Broadway number that's, like, that doesn't take itself too seriously, then go have a blast with it. But, yeah, as we said, take it with a tablespoonful of salt.
A mountain of salt.
A mountain of salt. Just all the salt.
And finally, if you could combine this with another musical, which one would you pick?
Oh, man. We were talking earlier about hip-hop Thoroughly Modern Millie. So I think my natural choice here is Hamilton, a hip-hop musical that properly deals with immigration rights and race in America, or at least much better than this one does.
It would be interesting. That also draws to mind one of the reasons I was specifically talking about the adaptation of Not for the Life of Me into Mandarin and how it sounded weird is because I was thinking about how Lin-Manuel Miranda writes bilingual music, and he's done it for In the Heights and mm-hmm. you did it for Moana, and he writes it like this is one thing that he's very, very good at and why he was hired for Moana is specifically writing music that transitions seamlessly between languages and builds on two languages at the same time. I don't think he speaks Mandarin, but to bring that aspect with presumably people who are fluent in the language and maybe being able to build more songs bilingually would be really cool.
Oh, yeah. That'd be amazing.
It's my 2 cents on that on that question. All right. Thank you for joining me today, Kristen.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Quinn.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Corner of the Sky. You can find us online at theincomparable.com/COTS or follow us on Twitter at COTS Podcast. If you would like, you can also review us in Apple Podcasts or recommend us in Overcast. Until next time.
Forget about the boy. Forget about the boy. Forget about the boy.